Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and if you've been outside today or yesterday, you don't need me to tell you that we're experiencing a heat wave. Most of us, if we can, just crank up the AC, shower more frequently maybe, wait it out with iced coffees or coca helados. But heat waves can have serious health consequences, especially for the elderly, and the death toll from extended heat waves can match that of any other natural disaster. Joining me to talk about heat waves and their consequences are Eric Kleinenberg, who's an associate professor at NYU's Department of Sociology, and Jessica Walker, senior policy analyst at United Neighborhood Houses, a federation of community centers throughout the five boroughs. Welcome to WNYC, both of you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Eric, for your book, Heat Wave, A Social Autopsy of Disaster in Chicago, you studied the 1995 heat wave that horrified everyone with the numbers of people who died in that city. Can you remind us a little of what happened there?
I can, and I need to, because one reason to write the book is that although the heat wave in 95 horrified people, people also forgot it very quickly, and that tends to happen with heat waves. Chicago experienced about 3 days of elevated heat, a little hotter, a little more humid than what we're seeing this week in New York City. But then what happened surprised everyone. Thousands of people in the city were hospitalized with extreme illnesses, and about 700 people in excess of the norm died from weather that lasted just about 3 days.
For just about 3 days, that's all?
That's right. What happens during heat waves is that it takes about 2 days of continuous high temperatures and humidity for people to begin to get very sick in high numbers. And so in Chicago that week, as in many cities in the U.S. and beyond, people didn't recognize how serious the problem was until bodies started to show up at the medical examiner's office. So there were thousands of people moving into the hospitals, and hospitals were going on bypass status, whereby they literally were closing the doors of emergency rooms because they couldn't take any additional patients. But in the mid-1990s, American cities were not really looking out for heat disasters, and no one recognized that this was a sign of a real, genuine disaster. In fact, there was a big debate in Chicago that summer over whether the disaster was really real. And for days, while the city was in the midst of a public health emergency, literally the media and the mayor were debating whether Chicago was, in fact, in a crisis.
Well, we're in the third day of over 90-degree temperatures in New York today, making it officially a heat wave. It's already 95 right now at only 10:43 in the morning. Eric, what do you think the lessons are concretely for New York and other cities from what happened in Chicago?
Well, there's still a lot of lessons to be learned. One thing that everyone should know is that we rarely hear about them, but in fact, heat waves kill more Americans in a typical year than all of the other so-called natural disasters combined.
Really?
And
this hasn't been a typical year.
To hear that, but it is true. There's some estimates that the excess death from heat waves is about 1,500 in the country in a typical year, and during years like 1995, it can be much higher. One other thing that people need to know is that there are specific risk factors for heat waves. People who are most likely to be affected are the elderly, as you mentioned, but also the poor, especially people living in depopulated neighborhoods where there aren't a lot of places where you can get artificial cooling if you don't have home air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Many New Yorkers take for granted that they have air conditioning at home or in their offices, but for a lot of people that's not the case. And finally, people who are socially isolated, people who lack social contacts, who don't have people coming to check up on them. And for that reason, heat waves pose lots of challenges for everyone in the city. This is a week to really be thinking about the people who are isolated and elderly and poor and abandoned.
Jessica Walker, tell us about your organization, United Neighborhood Houses, and what role you play helping people during heat waves.
Sure, Brian. As you said, United Neighborhood Houses is the association of community centers and settlement houses all over the city. And all of our members provide a variety of services for all ages, ranging from daycare to childcare, and a lot of services for seniors. And so during this time, quite a few of our members are actually serving as cooling centers to help the elderly and those who need to get out of the heat. Eric is sort of being modest. His book actually was a seminal work that really changed the way that a lot of people approach heat waves and specifically how we work to help the elderly during this time of need. as something that we've really seen is, just as he said, the socially isolated seniors in the city are most at risk during heat waves and at a variety of other times as well.
So how do you reach out?
Well, there are a variety of things. The city is doing quite a bit right now, again, trying to publicize the cooling centers that are available, but there is quite a lot more work to be done in terms of helping to make sure that the people actually use them, but then also trying to instill a little bit of responsibility in all of us to make sure that we actually do our part in trying to help those who are vulnerable and might not be able to get to the cooling centers on their own.
We do want to open up the phones and take your calls on this. What special precautions do you take in the heat? If you're an older New Yorker, do you go to the cooling centers? How do you take care of yourself in the heat? Do you have older relatives living alone in the city? What do you do for them in the heat? Call us with any of your questions regarding public safety in a heat wave at 212-433-WNYC or the historical experience from Chicago in the 90s. And the lessons from that, 212-433-9692, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org as we talk with Jessica Walker, Senior Policy Analyst at United Neighborhood Houses, and Eric Kleinenberg from NYU, who wrote Heat Wave, A Social Autopsy of Disaster in Chicago, a study of that 1995 heat wave that horrified everyone with the numbers of people who died. Jessica, how would you say the city is doing with their outreach during this heat wave, and for that matter, for the last 10 years following what happened in Chicago? We invited, we should mention, the City Office of Emergency Management to come on and talk about some of the things that they're doing, cooling centers and whatever, but they weren't able to provide us with somebody. So are you rating the city?
Well, I think that they are getting better. Absolutely. They've done quite a bit of publications to try to get the word out about what people can be doing in addition to increasing the number of cooling centers that are available. But as I said, there's a lot more work to be done in the long term. There are different strategies that we could be employing to not only prevent prevent people from falling ill at the, you know, during heat waves, because clearly it's a very preventable problem. But also, we could be employing strategies that prevent people from becoming socially isolated in the first place, to sort of reach out to folks through outreach and social programs, and especially for seniors, so that when a heat wave strikes, they're not even vulnerable at that point.
Eric, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what we commonly call the heat island effect. I think everybody kind of casually knows that it's hotter in the city than in the surrounding areas, typically during hot weather. But what scientifically is a heat island, and are heat islands for some reason intensified in neighborhoods that happen to have a lot of low-income people?
Well, I'll try to put it as simply as possible. One characteristic of urban areas is they tend to lack green space, don't have a lot of trees. And so the concrete, the asphalt, the metal, the skyscrapers attract heat, intensify the effect of the sun, and then the pollution that urban areas generate tend to trap the heat. And that means that cities on average are hotter than surrounding suburban areas, but also that they remain hotter at night. They don't get as cool, and so it's that continuous intense heat that really endangers people and that has made urban areas more dangerous than other places. Whether or not low-income areas are hotter than high-income areas depends a lot on the kind of microclimate, and so I can't say that that's the issue. But
was that a factor in Chicago?
Not that the poor neighborhoods in Chicago were hotter, but the residents there lacked access to home air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
That was a major factor, and also that in Chicago there are neighborhoods that had hundreds of thousands, or say 100,000 people in 1950, that had 25 or 30,000 people by 1995, places that were literally abandoned physically. And residents in a number of those depopulated areas not only didn't have access to home air conditioning, but also didn't have the kinds of places that they could go to cool down very easily. The most poor and abandoned neighborhoods in Chicago also tend to be hotspots for the violent drug market and have conditions that would keep people indoors protecting themselves as an everyday survival strategy. And so Jessica, I think, has very rightly said that in heat waves we see risks become elevated, but they're really the same kinds of risks and conditions that you could find every day in American cities. So in a way, what's interesting about heat waves is that they provide resources for us to understand things in the city that are happening every day. And there's one other thing I think we should say about this, that mm-hmm. I noticed how startled you were that heat waves kill more Americans than the other disasters combined typically, and I imagine mm-hmm. that's true for most of your
listeners. Maybe because we all have, Hurricane Katrina and tsunamis and things like that on our mind these days.
Well, but I think that was true before those events also, and I think the media's played a role in this. Heat waves are not telegenic disasters. When a hurricane is coming, we all watch it on television for days before it hits ground. Typically, most hurricanes are not as catastrophic as Katrina, and they don't generate the kind of human damage that heat waves do. But, of course, we don't do that for heat waves. We have dueling meteorologists. We don't really pay attention to them until, in some ways, after the fact. We could be having this conversation a couple days before the heat arrives, and that would be better as a kind of public safety measure. So heat waves are themselves invisible. They're not very dramatic in most cases. But also, I think it's important to emphasize that the people that heat affects, the elderly and the poor and the isolated, are themselves invisible. They're not the kinds of people whose needs and concerns are making the news every day. And so it's no surprise that the story of heat waves went missing for such a long time. That was a big reason I wanted to write the book about Chicago in 1995. But unfortunately, the book was far from enough. In 2003 in Europe, many people now know about the heat wave in France. That was a heat wave that lasted about 3 weeks. So in other words, much longer than the one in Chicago.
And the death toll there was something like 10,000?
Some estimate about 15,000 in France. And in Europe, on the continent more broadly, some estimate the death somewhere between 30,000 and 35,000. And that's terrifying. But one can only imagine what could happen to a major American city if a heat wave arrived and lasted for 3 weeks, as opposed to the 3 days that we saw in Chicago in 1995. And those are the kinds of things we need to be concerned about at a time when there are more people who are living alone and aging alone and also dying alone in American cities than ever before. We have a kind of formula for disaster made of climate change and social changes having to do with the distribution of the population and the nature of urban inequality. And these are issues we don't talk about very much in our discussions of homeland security, but this is the heart of what security in cities is all about.
We're talking about heat waves and social conditions here on WNYC with Eric Kleinenberg, author of Heat Wave, A Social Autopsy of Disaster in Chicago, a study of the 1995 heat wave there and its effects, and Jessica Walker, senior policy analyst for United Neighborhood Houses. And Jessica, I think one of Eric's main points there was that social isolation in particular plays such an interactive role with heat waves to cause trouble for people. And I know your organization has produced a report on social isolation, haven't you?
We did, and it focused on social isolation specifically among the elderly. And it's pretty scary, actually, what we found. Basically, New York City, we feel, is at particular risk for social isolation among the elderly, more so than national statistics. Seniors in the city are more likely to be poor, to be disabled, to have trouble leaving their homes because of their disabilities, and they're more likely to live alone than seniors nationwide. So it's very frightening, actually.
Let's take a phone call. Ken in Manhattan. Ken, you're on WNYC.
Sorry for calling again. Our heat wave...
Oh, you were on yesterday, weren't you?
I was, indeed.
Okay, so just so you know, and everybody, we try to enforce a once-a-week rule so a lot of people can get a chance, but here you are, so go ahead.
I'm sorry. This heat wave would be a cold snap in many parts of the world, and I'm just wondering how are these other cultures possible?
It's an interesting question, Eric. 3 days of above 90 degrees is a big story in New York. There are a lot of places where it wouldn't be.
Well, first of all, we should make clear that we're not talking just about the heat. You're hearing another number this week, which is the heat index, which is a kind of combination of heat and humidity and a number of other climatic conditions. So it's not simply temperature we need to be paying attention to. But the other thing is that heat waves tend to be more deadly in places that do not always have extremely hot temperatures. So, for example, Phoenix or Palm Springs, on average, are much hotter than New York City in the summer. But the part of the everyday culture in places like that is adapting to heat. The rates of air conditioning in homes is higher, and there's a more general awareness of how to conduct oneself to deal with heat. cities like Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Kansas City, et cetera, are not used to weather like this. It comes a couple times a year, and so you tend to get those spikes of death in places like that. It doesn't mean that that cities in the West and the South are immune from the dangers of heat. Los Angeles, for example, has had catastrophic heat waves in the past. It's just that in recent years we've seen these spikes in places in the Northeast and the Rust Belt.
Ellen in Nyack, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ellen.
Hi. I really appreciate you having the show. And I think it's very helpful, but I think your speakers also have to include the fact that people with asthma and respiratory illness are at great risk as well during heat waves. I know I have asthma, and I was in the city a few weeks ago when it was very hot and humid, and I could hardly breathe. It was really quite scary.
Thank you for adding that. And Jessica, is there anything that United Neighborhood Houses does to help asthmatics cope?
Well, there are a number of health problems that are exacerbated by heat waves. Heart conditions, it varies just because the heat just stresses the body. But I think we're trying to pinpoint the social conditions here that really play a role in who lives and who dies in heat waves.
I could add one thing here, which is that we don't talk much about the effects of heat on very young people. They're less likely to die than are the very old. But they're also more likely to go out and exert themselves, either because they're in camps or, you know, social programs that don't recognize the risks of heat, or because, you know, if they're a little bit older and they're on their own, they feel invulnerable. It's, you know, why not go out and play basketball for 2.5 hours, which is something I love to do when I was a kid growing up. But it turns out that there are big spikes in hospitalization for young people who get dehydrated during this kind of weather. So the public health risks are broader also. It doesn't mean we shouldn't be having fun in the summer and enjoying this kind of temperature. I know there are a lot of people who say that they love summer for precisely these kinds of days. It's just that we need to be a little bit more cautious than we have been in the past and begin to take seriously this issue.
And that is where we're going to have to leave it. It may be somewhat of a relief to know that the temperature has dropped 2 degrees during this conversation, so it's now 93 in New York. And Eric Kleinenberg, associate professor at NYU's Department of Sociology, is the author of Heat Wave, A Social Autopsy of Disaster in Chicago, published by the University of Chicago Press. Jessica Walker is senior policy analyst with United Neighborhood Houses. Stay cool. Different room. Go out, find a girl. Come on, come on, the same song.